Good afternoon. So, last time we talked about some things in C that come up a bit less in C++, or wouldn't expect you to be so familiar with. So one thing was about how structs in C have different names than normal global type names. So if you have a struct foo, you can't type foo for the name unless you do something with typedef. Talked a little about malloc and free, which I think you may have seen briefly in 2150, but haven't really worked with because you had new, which is, if you're in C++, a better choice. Talked about comparing signed and unsigned and how it doesn't do what you think it should do sometimes, so don't do it. And about the notion of undefined behavior, that C has these standards in C++ too, and the standards are what the compilers are implementing, even when they're not great. And the compilers have things in that the standards don't specify, and they take advantage of that. And we saw an example with signed overflow, where sometimes the compiler did what you learned in 2150 is what happens when you wrap around for two's complement, and sometimes they did something else where they assumed, oh, that's not supposed to happen, the standard says I can ignore it, and they took advantage of that to do an optimization that you might think is wrong, but it's undefined behavior, and a whole bunch of other things are undefined behavior. Talked about bit shifting, so we switched topics from talking about the nits of the C standard to this idea that we wanted to expose bit operations to software, and that in the hardware we have our values as just a bunch of bits on wires. So you have an array of wires for 64 values, 64 wires maybe, each one with one bit. And if you want to get a few of those bits in hardware, it's easy. We just select a few of those wires and connect them where we want them to go. But we can't really do that in software. But we want to expose something equivalent. So our idea was bit shifting. So we looked at this right shift operation where we just move the wire, connect the wires, so they move the value over. So this let us get like 4 bits into a value, move that to the bottom where you could use it more easily. But we had to do something with the remaining bits in our registers. Our registers that are 64-bit always have 64 bits in them. We can't just have the top values have nothing in there. That's not an option. So we had 2 choices. So our first option was known as a logical shift. We put zeros in there. Our other option, known as an arithmetic shift, we copied the top bit, the sign bit, for a sign number. Those were our right shifts. And I believe we finished up talking about left shifts, which are just the opposite of right shifts. We don't have a hard decision for left shifts about what we want to shift in. We're just always going to shift in 0, because that gives us multiplication. And typically, we don't have a real reason to add ones to the end, so we don't make that a special operation. Okay, so any questions on things we covered last time before I talk about other topics? Okay, so we have a future homework start this week on doing some memory safety stuff. So we're going to have you use a memory safety error finding tool known as address sanitizer, which will tell you are you using a value after you freed it? Are you going outside the bounds of a malloc array? And so on. And we're going to have some code which is broken, and you're going to fix it for the lab. Then we have a follow-on homework where you're just going to write code that deals with various types of lists in C. I'm going to go over them here so it's clearer what we're talking about. So we have our sentinel terminated array. So this is for storing the values 1, 2, 3. We're going to store 1, 2, 3 and an extra value known as the sentinel. In this case, I chose -9999. Our assignment makes a particular choice for the sentinel. And we know how big the array is by looking for the sentinel value. This is exactly how strings in C work, where the sentinel value is a 0. So it's just the same concept, but with a different size of thing in the array and different sentinel value. We also have this notion of, we call a range. This is like how vectors work internally. We have a size and a pointer. The pointer is dynamically allocated and has at least enough stuff for the size, and we use the size to figure out whether we're in bounds or not. And finally, we have a linked list where we have a pointer to our head. It's a singly linked list, and we know how big it is by finding the null at the end. And for all of these, we have some part that's on the stack or in registers, that's like what we pass to a function, and some part that's dynamically allocated. So for a sentinel terminated array, we pass it around by passing a pointer. If we want it to be modified, we pass a pointer to the pointer. And that's stored in the stack or registers, and that points to some dynamically allocated space, which is the actual data, including the sentinel. For the range, we pass around the struct. So that means we're passing on the, keeping on the stack the actual length and the pointer. We aren't dynamically allocating it. It's not something we need to do. And for the linked list, we keep the head pointer on the stack or in registers. And what usually confuses people in this assignment the most is that one of the tasks is to implement an append or remove equal function where we pass a pointer to one of these lists. So what's a pointer to a sentinel terminated array? It's a pointer to a pointer. And you might, for example, need to change the sentinel terminated array to have a bigger size, which means mallocing more space and changing where the pointer points. So you need a pointer to a pointer to do that, because if you just gave you a pointer, you allocate new space, the caller doesn't know where that new space is unless you change the caller's pointer. And similar is true for the linked list. Let's say you append to a linked list that's initially empty. You're going to be passed in a null pointer to represent an empty list. You need a pointer to that pointer so you can change the head pointer to point to some place new if you start with an empty list. And that's usually what confuses people, because you don't have that much practice previously many with pointers to pointers. So just be careful. It's not something you shouldn't know, but it's something you don't have a lot of practice with. You know, it trips some people up, which is why we're reviewing it and have an assignment on it. Okay, so any questions about these lists? Okay. So when we finished up, we talked about doing the reverse of our shift operation. And one way of thinking about this is if I want to take my, say, nibble A, which I have now at the bottom, and I want to move it up. This is equivalent to multiplying by 16 if we were doing it without the shift operations. But in hardware, we just want to add a few zero wires to our value. Like, that's free. And we want to expose that ease to software. So we're going to have a shift operation for it. We could have chosen to make our right shift do this with a negative value. But this is not what x86 has chosen and not what C has chosen. So instead, we have a different operator and a different instruction. And this is going to be equivalent to multiplying by a power of 2. We don't have any special cases with negative numbers to deal with. Don't have to have two versions of the operator. Just always works. There's no rounding to be concerned with. So it's just generally simpler. So any questions about left shift? Good. Okay. So now that we've talked about that, let's go to a task where maybe shifting isn't quite what we want. So here I have a 16-bit value, and I want to extract these middle 4 bits. So I want to get the 2. In hardware, this is really simple. I have my 16-bit value on 16 wires. I just use 4 of those wires. How can I do this in C? And like we saw for our bit shifting, there's going to be a way we can do this with just arithmetic that, you know, you wouldn't need to know about binary to write. So that's one possible solution. So can someone tell me, like, what would that look like? There's a way of doing this just with arithmetic where you don't need to know that binary exists. You can just do it directly. Yeah.
So first, I'd shift it to the left all the way until the first two nibbles, nibble.
So you want to take value and shift it to the
left,
to 8 bits.
And then shift it right 12 bits.
We're trying to, this is the shift left. If you shift 8 bits, you get 1F. I think you're off by.
Oh, okay.
We're maybe going from the wrong side. The intention is that this is the ones place, twos place, fours place.
I'm confused about which way is which way, but I'd shift it all the way one way and then all the way the other way, so I bumped off the two ends.
Okay, so your idea is I want to shift over four to cross this off.
Yeah.
And then I want to shift over a bunch to cross these off, and then I want to shift it back to get my final result. So that is something you could do, assuming that the last shift is a logical shift and not an arithmetic shift, which would mess up the value by adding a bunch of ones, bits that we don't want. Okay? So there's also a way of doing this with just arithmetic. So remember when we talked about left shift, we said you could do a division instead, and it's the same. So there's going to be some version of this which is just division and related things. Yes?
I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but I was thinking you could AND it with a bunch of zeros and then 1, 1, 1, 1, where the move stuff is.
Okay.
Zeros of it.
So AND it with this value, which this is not valid C, but I'm just writing a binary constant. Okay. So that's something we'll talk about in a bit. So there's a way without bitwise operators that's equivalent to talking about, and we'd also want to shift it over to move the value to only have the two at the bottom. So there's something we can do without any of these bitwise shifting. Yeah.
Take it mod OX1F00 and then divide by 16.
So we want to take it mod something and then divide by 16. And so it'd be OX100, not one, off by 256. So we want to take it mod 256. The reason it's 256 is that if we divide by 256, we cut off the bottom 8 bits, because 256 is 2 to the 8th. So we take mod that, we get the remainder from dividing by 256. We're just going to subtract, which is just going to be the bottom 8 bits. And so that is, yes, one of those solutions. So we do mod 256, then divide by 16. You can also go the other way. You can divide by 16 and then take mod 16. But as people recognize, there are going to be operators that we'll talk about that you, some of you have seen before, most of you, that give us better access to manipulate individual bits than doing this division. And they're not going to require us, like the example of shifting back and forth, to know to write the code based on how big the number is. And they're going to handle more general cases than I just want to extract something in the middle, like I want to do multiple things to different parts of the number. That will be possible. So how are we going to expose the ability that hardware has to manipulate these bits in software? And the primary way we're going to do is with things like AND. That in the hardware, when we're talking about manipulating individual bits, we have these gates. These gates perform some basic operation where we put in two or more values and get out, or one or more, usually two values, and get out a result. Here I'm showing a gate which does XOR. And what we're going to do in our hardware is we're just going to have a whole bunch of these that work on all the bits we care about. And this is how what we're going to expose to the software is the ability to use these gates in order to decide what happens to each bit separately. And the way you can think about this is let's look at a truth table for an operation, in this case, AND. And we can think of AND as an operation where if we AND with something, we're doing one of two things, depending on whether we're ending with one, 0 or 1. If we end with 1, we're saying, take the bit you started with and keep it the same. And if we're ending with 0, we're saying to clear the bit. And so the functionality we're going to expose to users who want to manipulate individual bits is they get to select which bits we keep the same and which bits we clear by supplying bits to AND with. That we're going to give you an AND operation. You're going to say, I want to keep certain bits by supplying 1s to correspond to those bits. And you're going to say, I don't want to keep certain bits by supplying 0s to go with those. So you're going to construct what we'll call a mask of what bits you want to keep and remove. You'll put a 1 where you want to keep a bit, a 0 where you want to clear it, and you'll do an AND based on that mask in order to do those operations to a whole set of bits. And this AND all these bits together is available in C as the AND operation, single ampersand operation. And this treats a value as an array of bits. So for example, here I have 2, which in binary is 0, 0, 1, 0. And 4, which is 1, 0, 0, we say 0 and 0 is 0, 1 and 0 is 0, 0 and 1 is 0, and so on. And we get a result of 0. So we're just treating it as an array of bits. And the same is going to be true for 10 ended with 7. We say 0 and 1 is 0, 1 and 1 is 1, 0 and 1 is 0, 1 and 0 is 0, and so on. And if we remember our interpretation before, what we're saying when we're ending 10 with 7 is we're saying keep the bottom 3 bits of 10 and clear all the others. If we go back to our interpretation here, that's what that operation is saying to do. We're keeping the bottom 3 bits of 10 because those bits are set in 7. We're clearing all the others because all those bits are clear in 7. Okay, so questions? Oh, the operation here. Yeah. Which direction does the operation go? So it happens that the truth table for AND is symmetrical. So that doesn't matter, and it's, you know, the bits are just lined up least significant with least significant, so that doesn't matter. I'm usually going to speak of it as we're ending with the mask, but like it works the same either way. Yeah. So the question is, for the previous problem, you observe that this lets us keep the right bits, but then we need to move them to the right place with something like division. That's right. So we could use division. So we do ANDing and then shifting or dividing. But this ANDing operation gives us an alternative to like shifting them off the number and back on that we saw there. Yeah.
So what if, so are they treating all those as unsigned?
So the question is, what happens with signed numbers? What happens with negative numbers?
Or like, how do they know those are signed and or unsigned versus signed?
So the question is, how do we know it's unsigned versus signed? So we're going to do bit by bit, regardless of whether it's a signed or unsigned number. So if there's a signed bit, we're going to AND the signed bits together. So it doesn't change the operation we actually do. So it's not an important thing. Now the C compiler is going to have a notion of whether the result is signed or unsigned.
Let's say you're doing like a short with the int, for example.
Okay, so the question is, what if we have different sizes? What happens? It's the same as with, so it's the same type of rules as you saw with comparison, that they're all going to be converted to one type. In the case of a short and an int, C has this general and not intuitive rule that almost all arithmetic is done with the things which are at least as big as ints. So the short's going to be promoted to an int, and then it's going to be done with ints. But it's rules like that which are going to handle that, which are in the standard, and you not as intuitive as they should be. Okay, other questions? Okay, so we have this operation, and in x86 assembly, there's an AND instruction, kind of like the add instruction with all the same variants, different sizes, and so on. And this is really simple to implement in hardware. The typical implementation is that we're going to have a set of wires holding each value. So we're going to have one of the bits of the values from our registers on each wire. And a typical processor is just going to have an array of the gates. So it's going to be really simple. You might think of it as like we're doing a loop over all the bits. That's not the hardware implementation. The hardware implementation is just that we have an array of these. It just takes as much time as doing one operation because we're doing them all at the same time. So because these gates are really simple components, this is a really fast operation in the hardware. Okay, so then that gives us, yeah, sorry.
So if we can go back a slide, is there also an array of OR gates somewhere and like an array of XOR gates?
So the question is there going to be an array of each type of gates? Probably.
Okay.
There might be other implementation strategies that aren't quite an array of gates, but yeah, probably there's an array of each of them somewhere. It's the most common way of doing this. It might be something a little more complicated to avoid having duplicated circuitry between the bitwise operators, but it's not like something almost this simple. Okay, so that gives us just ways of doing our bitwise operations, which are without, sorry, not are extracting that 4 bits that we saw at the beginning. Now we don't have to do it with modulus and divide. We don't have to do it by shifting values off the ends. So we can take 2 ways of doing this bitwise, one of which is we shift the value over and then use an AND to select the bits we want and clear all the others. And I'm ending with OXF, and this just has the bottom 4 bit set after shifting. That's where the value we want is. That works. Another option is I AND with something which has the second set of 4 bit set, which is where the value started, and then I shift that over to the bottom where I want the final results. Yes?
So
Yeah, so when I say extract, so the question is when I say extracting, I mean I'm just getting those 4 bits and putting them, getting a number which is just those 4 bits, not getting a number with 16 bits and the 4 bits in that place set in the same way. Yeah, so this means that the result of these functions is literally 0x3, not 0x30 in this case. I pass 0x1234. Other questions? Okay. And each of these functions is going to produce the very straightforward assembly, given what we learned was the assembly operations for the shifts and the ands. And you might imagine that a clever compiler would do the same thing for the other versions and probably would. So that's our sort of our AND operation lets us extract some bits from a number, clear some bits. You know, and it's probably our most useful tool whenever we have this question of, I want to do something with certain bits here and not others. Now we can always get just those bits in an integer not have to worry about and get them, you know, so that's the integer's value. It's not like moved around. You don't have to like divide already. And this general pattern, which I'll call mask and shift, we construct a mask for the bits we care about. We AND with that mask and use those bits. You know, can let you do most of the things you might want to do with numbers and their bit representation without doing something like converting it to an array of bits and manipulating the array and then converting it back from the array of bits to a number. Now, AND isn't the only bitwise operator, so there are some others, and I have ways you can think about them. So one other notable one is OR, and you can think of this as conditionally setting a bit, that if we're ORing with 0, we're doing nothing to a value. If we're ORing with 1, we're always setting a bit. So if you ever say, I want to set a certain bits in a number, you're going to OR with a mask which has zeros for the bits you don't want to change and ones for the bits you want to set. And that's what you can think of as the bitwise OR operation is set certain bits just like the bitwise AND operation is select, keep certain bits, and clear others. The XOR operation you can think of as if we XOR with 0, we do nothing. We get the same result. If we XOR with 1, we flip a bit. So if you ever need to flip bits, you XOR with a mask, which has 1s for the places you want to flip a bit, and 0 for the places you want to keep the bits the same. So these are all ways of thinking about our different bitwise operators in terms of I have a task for manipulating the bits, which ones of these are useful, and this is sort of how I would think about them. That if I want to keep certain bits, get certain bits, or clear certain bits, I use AND. If I want to set certain bits, I use OR. If I want to flip certain bits, I use XOR. And then the task is just to make sure I construct a mask that says the bits I care about are 1 or 0 as appropriate. And has everything else set the opposite. Okay. And each of these, again, works on an array of bits. So for bitwise OR, 0 or 1 is 1, 1 or 1 is 1. For ORing 10 and 7, 0 or 1 is 1, 1 or 1 is 1. So 10 ORed with 7 is 15. And if we think about this in the conditionally setting bits way, what I'm saying here is take 10 and set the bottom 3 bits. And that's what this does. We set the bottom 3 bits, leaving unchanged bits that are already set in those bottom 3 bits and not affecting any of the other bits. And we get 15, which has all the bottom 4 bits set, including the fourth bit, which was set originally. And XOR, similarly, I told you we can think of as conditionally flipping bits. So if we XOR 10 with 7, 7 has the bottom 3 bits set, we're saying flip the bottom 3 bits of 10. And that's exactly what we've done. We flip 0 to 1, we flip 1 to 0, and 0 to 1. And that's our new answer, and that's how we got 13. Okay, so questions on our other bitwise operators? Okay, so there's one bitwise operator that we have in C, which is complement. Just represented by tilde. And this is an oddball because it's an unary operator. It has one operand. And it's the bitwise version of exclamation point. So exclamation point takes a Boolean and gives you the opposite of the Boolean. This is the bitwise version of that. So it takes each bit and gives you the opposite of that bit. So if we take complement of 0, we get a value with all 1s. And since 0 is a signed int, we get negative 1. We take the complement of 2. We flip all the bits. So there's one bit in 2, which was set to 1, which ends up being set to 0 in this value, in the final value. So we get something which ends up being negative 3 if we interpret it as a signed int. And this hexadecimal if we want it as an unsigned int. And so on. So that's the complement operator. And all these bitwise operators correspond in x86 to single instructions and on many processors. Yes. There's instructions for each of them. For OR and XOR, it's OR and XOR. We've already seen XOR a bit in some assembly snippets I've shown. Because it's used on x86 for this trick of setting values to zero, it happens that it's more efficient in some ways than the obvious move zero into the value, so compilers like using it. And I believe this is not or negate in x86 action. So there's one operator which just does this. Okay, so those are our functions for manipulating bits. And we have a future assignment, which is going to be on some bit manipulation puzzles next week. And it's to solve some problem with bitwise operators, often a problem that maybe would be more straightforward to do with normal arithmetic and comparisons. And you might say, why are we doing this? So one thing is that it like, might help you think about hardware design, because these are closer to the building blocks hardware has. It might help you understand bitwise ops, and sometimes these are good ways of doing things, sometimes they aren't. And also, we've learned that it's an unreasonably common interview type, I think because some interviewers think that knowing how to do things with bitwise operators means you're clever, when it probably really means you've learned techniques for using bitwise operators effectively. So people have appreciated it for that reason. So let's go through an example of one exercise for this, which seems pretty daunting. So we're going to start by talking about the ternary operator. The ternary operator exists in C, C++, and Java. And if you use enough C and C++ and Java in the real world, you'll eventually come across it because some people like using it. And basically what it does is here we have w equals x question mark y colon z. This is equivalent to if x, then w equals y, otherwise w equals z. Okay. And our task is going to be to implement this in C without the ternary operator and without if, else, or, etc. And one way you can think about this is that when we're done, the assembly that results from the C, if it's compiled in the straightforward way, would be jump-free assembly. There's not going to be any conditional jumps, you know, in that assembly, most likely, if in the straightforward implementation, which would not be true if, for example, we use the OR operator, because we know OR short circuits. The double OR operator, I should say. And this seems like a daunting task. So it's not obvious, like, how do I start given this? Even though I've simplified things a whole bunch by saying x, y, and z are just 0 or 1. So we only have 8 possible inputs. You know, so we could, like, make the whole table of what these are going to be. And that would be a way you could try going about thinking about this. But I think the easiest first step is that we're going to try to separate this into two subproblems. And those subproblems are going to be these. So the first question is, like, why is it useful to do these subproblems? So my subproblems are if x, then y, otherwise 0, and if x, then 0, otherwise z. And observation is, let's think about ORing these two things together, that what I'm going to get is I'm going to get if x, I'm going to get y ORed with 0, and otherwise I'm going to get z ORed, sorry, I'm going to get 0 ORed with z. And if you remember what we talked about, our intuition for OR is that, so if x, I'm going to take y and I'm going to set all the bits specified by 0 in it. So I'm going to take y and set no bits in it, so I'm going to get y. And if not x, I'm going to take 0, and I'm going to set all the bits specified by z in it, so I'm going to get z. So it turns out if we OR these two things together, we get our original value. So I've split it up into these two pieces, where if I OR the two halves of it together, I'm going to get a result for the final answer. So all I need to do is solve each half produce, you know, some version of that result, and then I can use bitwise OR to get my final answer after that. And this is a very handy strategy for solving problems like this, is that you just write it as the bitwise OR of a bunch of things that are zero or a correct value. Yes?
What's the spread of
equals? Oh, sorry. This is, I'll rewrite that. This is zero ORed with Z. Is that?
Okay.
And, of course. Okay, other questions? Okay, so let's work on our first part, which is if x, then y, else 0. And this only has 2 bits of input and 1 bit of output. So why don't I just write out all the possible answers? So I just write out a truth table. And if we look at that truth table and compare it to our bitwise operator truth tables, we'll find out that that's just AND. So I know that that's X ANDed with Y. Okay, so that's my first part. So then I need to work on the second part, and we can just say, well, we want the opposite value for X, so I can just flip X with the complement operator, and I'm done. And do the same thing, it's the same task after I flip X. Questions? Step? So I then combine those two things together, and now I have an answer for my original problem of doing if x, then y, else c, with these constraints that we're only dealing with 0 and 1 for x, y, and z. So questions on this answer? Okay, so let's try making this a bit more general. So these constraints aren't great. So let's say y and z can be anything. And we'll leave x as 0 or 1 to make things not get too complicated yet. And the old solution doesn't work. And one way we can see this is if we say x is 1, y is 2, and z is 4. Well, our result is going to be 1 ANDed with 2, ORed with not 1, ANDed with 4. 1 AND with 2 is going to be 0, because we have 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, and with 0, 0, 1, 0. This is 1 AND with 0 is 0. 0 and with 1 is 0. So this is 0. And tilde 1 is going to be 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, all 1s. And we're ending that with 4, which is 1, 0, 0. So we have 0 ended with 0 is 0, 1 ended with 0 is 0, 1 ended with 1 is 1, 1 ended with 0 is 0, and so on. So this ends up being 4. So we get an answer of 4 when it should have been 2. So it doesn't work in general. It does work for 0 and 1 because we only worry about the last bit, and the last bit was actually computed correctly in both, is computed correctly in all cases. And you can see that yourself, you know, most systematically by just trying all the 8 possible 0 and 1 value combinations of x, y, and z. But we can think about what's going wrong here. And the problem here is that I'm selecting only the bottom bit of 2, and I'm selecting not no bits of 4, but all but the last bit of 4. That the masks I'm ANDing with, based on x, they select the right bottom bit, but they don't select any of the other bits correctly. that they're saying clear all the other bits or keep all the other bits, which is not what we want. So we'll do the same division, but for this, we want to do y ended with a mask, where the mask is, if x is 1, keep all the bits of y, not just the bottom bit. And if x is 0, is get rid of all the bits of y, not just all but the bottom bit. Or not just the bottom bit of y. Which means that if x is 1, we want to figure out how to compute this mask of all 1s. And if x is 0, we want to figure out how to compute this mask of all 0s. So what are some ways we can transform our x into these masks? And I'm not looking for ways which are necessarily elegant. Just ways that don't involve like if statements. Yeah. So you want to say x ended with, so 1, 1, 1, all 1s? This still gives us 0 or 1. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that we could do shift just to the sign bit, and then shift the x over to the sign bit, and then do an arithmetic shift back. Yes, that would be one way of doing this. So assuming we can get an arithmetic shift reliably, that would work. And that this shift, doesn't care about going into the sign bit. Okay. Any other ways? So there's like a real brute force way we can do this. Yeah. Yeah, so we can do x ord with x shifted over 1, ord with x shifted over 2, until we get to 31 or 63, or whatever number we need to go to. Okay. Any other ideas? Yeah. So we can take the complement of x and add it to, okay. Why adding it to like this?
Yeah, so like if it's all ones, it should overflow.
Okay. So that doesn't quite work the way you want, but you're close. And the reason you're close is that another solution is minus x, which is not plus all ones, but plus 1. Because all ones, we want it to overflow to 0, and you're going to go the other direction. So there's a trick, which is minus x, which we can also write, close to what the suggestion had there, which is complement of x plus 1, flip all the bits and add 1, remember your 2's complement. And that's another way of getting this. Of course, you might have some complaints about this solution. It's a nice trick. It's not an intuitive trick, mainly because of our problem setup, because I was like, let's do this with bitwise operators, is what I was saying. What I wrote down was without, if, else, or et cetera. But you might say, this is, plus is kind of a more complicated operation than we were dealing with before. But that's the solution, all right. But we could have all these alternatives. We can shift over to the sign bit and do an arithmetic shift back. We can do the x shifted over 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 63 times. And we have this generic negation solution that at least doesn't require us to know how big x is. That's a nice advantage. But kind of seems like cheating because we're now using this plus operation, which seems like it's way more complicated than all the other bitwise operations we've used. Addition or subtraction. So how about the other direction? So I want to do the other half of the problem, which is if x, 0, otherwise z. So basically, I want to get the opposite mass. Then I want to turn 0 into all 1s and 1 into all 0s. Anyone have a way I can do this? Preferably reusing my previous solution in some way. Yeah. Okay, so you want to add x to all s, which is negative 1, like that. Seems close. Yeah?
If you just did the same thing from last time, but then you did like a complement, would that work?
So you want to do minus complement of x? Yeah, so the last thing we did, I guess, for reference was minus x was the previously. So what do you want to do?
Just like take the complement of the results.
Okay, so you want to take tilde of that? That's, yeah, that works. Yeah.
You can take a x4,
So yeah, so another option is we can flip a bit an x and then do the same thing we were doing before. So those are both solutions. On my slides, I have the flip a bit in x, but take minus x and complement that also works great. And you could also do minus x and, you could do minus 1 minus x, which is going to be it would also be a solution which is close to what you're getting at here.
What is it, x minus 1 work?
We're right, which is the same as x minus 1. So yeah, this also works. So there are a bunch of solutions, right? I can, doing algebra, I should know how to do algebra. Yeah, so yeah, this would also work because it's equivalent to this way of thinking about it, and this 1 minus x is x. It's the same as flipping the bit in x. So those are all valid solutions, so there's a bunch of ways of doing it. All these solutions are taking advantage of that negation trick, like doing addition, which might seem unreasonably expensive, but technically not a constraint I had in the original problem. And later we'll talk about what if we need to use like one of these alternatives, can we do better than what I'm showing here. Talk about strategies that will help with that. We won't talk about it explicitly, but we'll talk about strategies that won't seem so much like cheating by using addition. Okay, so we combine those together and we get an answer. And now we have one constraint at the top that x is 0 or 1, and we almost, except for that, this is exactly the same as that C expression, x question mark y colon z. So our last step is going to be to get rid of that constraint. But first, questions on what we have so far before we move on to that. Okay, so I want to get rid of that constraint. And there's a bunch of ways we could imagine doing this. So if you look carefully at like my original problem statement, there's an easy C way, which is kind of tricky, which is exclamation point x is 0 or 1, because that's how Boolean operators work, like equality. Double exclamation point x is also 0 or 1. So we can just convert x into 0 or 1 by using enough exclamation points to get the version we want. And you might say, what is this in assembly? Isn't this checking for equality to zero? Yes, it is. The way it works in assembly is this converts into a test instruction to set the condition codes, and then an instruction that copies from ZF, possibly negated, into a register. Yeah. The question is, what does the test instruction do? So the test instruction is going to compute RAX and RAX and set the condition codes based on that. And RAX ended with RAX is going to be RAX. So we're going to set the condition codes based on the current value of RAX, which means that if RAX is 0, we're going to set the 0 flag. And then set E for set equal checks the zero flag because zero means equal for subtraction and uses that to set a register. That makes sense? Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
So set E copies the value from the zero flag to RAX?
Or copies it to the specified register. Typical usage might be like set E of AL.
Set
none
and set any does the opposite.
It copies the zero flag flipped. There's a bunch of these set instructions that correspond basically to all the jump conditional instructions. Okay, so if we use this trick, we can do this all the way. And you might complain, gosh, we were trying to do these simple bitwise operations, which we said made a lot of sense as being really simple in hardware, and now we're using the test instruction. How does that actually work? And doesn't this seem like we're not getting our speed advantage of maybe that bitwise operators would be faster? So let's first talk about actual performance on modern systems. So in a typical modern system, bitwise AND OR, XOR, shifts, adds, subtracts, and compares all take basically the same amount of time. And you might say, wait, isn't a subtraction way more complicated than bitwise AND? And the answer is yes. Yes, it is. It's a lot more complicated, but that doesn't mean it's slower. So basically, the processors have decided, bitwise AND and compare, adds and subtracts and compares are really important to performance. And they're a lot more important that those work well and work fast than that we squeeze the last extra bit of performance out of our bitwise AND. So they haven't gone through any effort to make bitwise ANDs faster, even though maybe that's possible. Maybe if I was a processor designer and I really cared about having bitwise ANDs be as fast as possible, they would end up being faster than ADDs. That's not what real processor designers care about, because if your Intel processor made ADDs a little slower to make bitwise ANDs faster, you'd be disappointed, because your processor would run slower. So that's not what they've done. So typically, these ADDs are actually the fastest thing to do, because they've devoted the hardware to make them as fast. And typically what this means is that, just like I mentioned, we might have an array of ANDs for the AND operation. They have the hardware to do an add, in the same sort of amount of time, even though it's a lot more hardware. Okay, so that's the practical note. So practically speaking, the test instruction, it's really fast. It's they have the hardware to check if something is zero. We don't need to do it other ways and expect that to beat that, even if we're using simpler operations like bitwise AND and OR. Even though, we're using more complicated hardware to do the same thing. So let's say we don't want to cheat. Let's say we don't have exclamation point, and we wanted to still do this. What would it look like with bitwise operators? And this might tell us what's a design for doing this exclamation point operation in hardware. for changing x from any value to 0 or 1. And there's a solution that's also pretty simple if you have addition that I will leave as an exercise for later. But let's say we don't have addition or the actual test instruction. We want to do it with just our bitwise operators and our shifting, these simpler things that we think should be easy in hardware. And this seems like a daunting problem, especially since I'm saying we have like 2 to the 64 possible values of x, make them all work. So one way I like starting thinking about a problem like this is, how do we solve it if x is 2 bits? So let's think about 2 bits of x. So our possible values of x are 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1, which gives us a result of, for double exclamation point here, of 0, 1, 1, and 1. Does this look familiar? It's OR. We're ORing the 2 bits of x together. So how can we write that in C? ORing the 2 bits of x is a 2-bit number. We're ORing the 2 bits together. How can we do that with the operators we know in C? So we're going to use an OR. Or have a bitwise OR. What are we going to OR? Yeah?
I have a question.
Yeah.
What is the exclamation point do?
So what does exclamation point do? This is, so exclamation point y is going to give us 0 if y is 0, and 1 otherwise, which means double exclamation point y is going to give us 1 if y is 0, It's going to give us 1 if y is 0, so if y is false, it gives us true, and 0 otherwise, and double exclamation point does the reverse of that. So it gives us 0 if y is 0, and 1 otherwise.
What if there's 2 bits like x?
This is what it does. So the otherwise here is, so if there's 2 bits, if it's 0, meaning all the bits are 0, it gets 0. So because it's a logical operator, it checks all the bits, just like, you know, the OR operator, like 2 is true in C. And this is checking truth. Yes, I guess I should have spent more time reviewing that. So this is the notion that in C, false is 0, everything else is true. So this is saying, is it false or not? So that means that what we want for double exclamation point x, if x is 0, we get 0. If x is any form of non-zero value, we get 1. And someone pointed out that for 2 bits, this is ORing the 2 bits together. So what does that look like if we write that explicitly in C? Yeah.
X shift left one, shift right one.
You want to shift back and forth. You want to extract just the 1 bit. Okay. We'll use and instead, just to keep things simpler. So we want to extract the bottom bit.
So x and 1.
So x and 1 or x and 2 gives us x, because we're going to end up with, let's say x is 2, we're going to end up with x and 1 is 0, 0, x and 2 is 1, 0, we're going to OR those together, we're going to get 2.
So x and 2 and then you shifted right.
Yeah. Or, so we can do x and with 2, shifted right 1. And this with x and 1, or this with x and 1. And the other way we can write this is what I have here, which is x shifted over 1, ended with 1, or with x ended with 1. And we can extend this to 4 bits. So what I've done here is I take the bottom bit, I take the next bit, I take the next bit, and I just OR them all together, and that gives us our is any bit set. It's going to be 1. If any of the bits are 1, it's going to be 0 otherwise. And so on. So this makes sense, how I got that logic? So we're extracting the bottom bit, ORing it with the next bit. And it turns out that this pattern continues. We can just OR all the bits together, and that will give us the right answer. That if any bit is 1, we'll get 1. If none of the bits are 1, we'll get 0. And only in that case, which gives us exactly this expression here, 0 if it's 0, 1 otherwise. Okay, questions? People look confused. Yeah. So the question is, would we implement this with a loop? Not if we're following the original constraints I had of like not using comparisons.
So would it just be different to every different size of that?
So yeah, we'd write this for a different size. Okay. And you might say, okay, if we're doing this for 64 bits, I do never want to write that code ever, and we're gonna be really, really slow. So let's try to like figure out some ways to work. So one thing we're doing here is we're taking all but the bottom bit of numbers multiple times. An observation you can make is that if you bitwise OR two numbers together and then take the bottom bit of that, that's the same as taking the bottom bit, ORing with something else you took the bottom bit of. That we have this nice property of AND, so we can pull out the ANDs with 1 out of all the inner expressions. Just because we know if we only care about the bottom bit, we can have the other bits have values, and yes, those values are going to mean something, but we'll just ignore them by getting rid of them at the end. So the other bits are going to have random bits and that values in them that we don't care about. That's fine. We're just going to compute all those other bits and then get rid of them by ending with 1 at the end. So that got rid of some wasted work. So now it's still really bad if we have 64 bits, but it's not as bad. But let's look at another source of wasted work here. So each of these bitwise ORs for our 4-bit number is performing 4 OR operations, and we only care about 1 of them. So this is a source of wasted work here, that we're sort of getting 1/4 usage out of our OR gates. That we're doing all these extra OR operations that don't matter. So one question is like, can we try to take advantage of the results of any of the other OR gates? And the answer is gonna be yes, and I'm gonna show you why. So let's consider our first step here, this X ORed with X shifted over 1, what that looks like. We have X and X shifted over 1. And in each column, we OR x0 with x1. x0 is the bottom bit of x, x1 is the next bit. x1 with x2, x2 with x3, and so on. So these are the results we get. And notice that we have x1 OR with x0. And 2 bits later, we have x3 OR with x2. And the result we want is actually all the bits OR together. OR is associative and commutative, so it doesn't matter the order we do it in. And previously, we computed these with 2 separate OR operations. But if we just look at this value Y we have both of them. We don't need to recompute X2 OR with X3. If we just use that bits we already have computed. So that's exactly something we can do. We can shift Y over to move that value to line up with X1 OR with X0. OR those together, and we'll get our final result. We also get a few other numbers, like we have x2 and OR with x1, which we now OR with x3, but we don't care about that. We're going to mask it out and only keep this bottom bit. So we have this sort of Fanon pattern, where in our first OR operation, we do 2 useful ORs, and then we do 1. And so instead of ORing things 4 times, now we're ORing things 3 times. So you've saved some work. Any questions about this pattern here? Okay, so gives us an actual solution. Here I've used a temporary variable, which I would recommend doing. Don't try to like fit it in one line, because you can't really in this case. Do that. And we can extend this. So I've done this for 4 bits with this sort of Fanon pattern, and we can do that for, say, 8 bits. where I OR every pair of values by shifting over one. Since I shifted over one, it's things which are one apart. And then I have related values which are two apart. And then I have related values which are three apart. So my final answer is going to be Z ORed with Z shifted over four. And then take the bottom bit of that. We'll have some other bits we don't care about. Does this pattern make sense? So that gives us a 32-bit solution. No, that's not nearly so bad as what we were proposing doing before of, having 32 different ORs. Now, in a real machine, it's likely to be less efficient than using a test instruction still, but this is a useful pattern, and it's probably similar to how the test instruction is implemented. The hardware probably uses this kind of fan-in pattern to efficiently test if something is zero or one. It just, it doesn't OR them one by one. It probably does a bunch in parallel because you have space, you just set up multiple gates in this type of pattern. And an observation you can make on this is that bitwise and an OR, even though they're kind of built as just a simple way of exposing I want to do things to particular bits, they really let us do lots of things in parallel. And you can think of them as a single instruction that's really doing the work of a loop. And we'll see this pattern later on in the semester. So for example, x86 machines have an instruction which is add four pairs of integers together in one instruction. And that's very similar to what we're seeing with bitwise AND. And this is the concept known as single instruction multiple data. And sort of bitwise operators are sort of the simplest form of that. But as a general tool that hardware can give us, it's both easy for hardware to implement and can give you a lot of speed up if you take advantage of it in cases where the hardware doesn't have a specialized thing for that, for the overall operation you're doing, like it does for testing if something is zero. And we almost have this for free if you think about adding. So if we think about adding in base 10, if I want to add 14 and 23 and 13 and 99 in parallel, well, if I just add these big base 10 numbers, I can read out 13 plus 99 is 144 and 14 plus 23 is 37 from this number. But this is kind of ugly because I needed to add some zeros to make sure the adds don't go into each other. So what I'm talking about the hardware providing this is that they're just providing the fix that you don't have to worry about that. The hardware will avoid carrying between the two values. And we can apply the same type of principle in binary here. And this is the sort of thing we're doing with our bitwise ORs, is that we're just saying, well, we're doing lots of operations in parallel already. Let's just take advantage of that we actually can compute multiple values with this one instruction. And that's a pattern we'll see later on. Okay. So questions about this notion of doing things in parallel? So yeah, this is examples that we kind of had this for free even with ads. We just have to worry about carries, which is one reason why you can think it's simple to provide this kind of instruction of add four pairs of values together, because it's basically the same as implementing a big add. Okay, so since we're talking about bit puzzles, so for the homework next week, or if you have this problem in an interview, my general advice, so use paper, like any problem, find subproblems. Notice that we solved a lot of these problems by when I went through doing the ternary operator, I did simplified versions that were subproblems and then expanded that out in order to find my real thing. I did some divide and conquer, and I just added constraints where I knew I could solve the problem and then try removing them slowly. We have this general strategy of masking and shifting. If you have bits you care about, we know we have this procedure of anding and shifting, or shifting and anding, that will get those bits out and let you work with them independently. So just do that for all the sets of bits that matter. You know, and later on you can worry about optimizations like, I don't need to and in the beginning, I can and at the end, but do that later to save, you know, time or space. And similarly, you know, you can recognize that you don't have to do everything in one line. In an assembly, there's going to be registers anyway, so you should keep common values in registers. So like here, I can compute exclamation point x once. I don't need to compute it twice. You know, and in the assembly, like that's going to be a natural thing which happens. Okay. So questions about these ideas here? Okay, so given no questions, so here I have a task here, which is I have a number in x, and let's say the bits of the number are a, b, c, d, e, f, and I want to convert it to a, b, c, d, f, e. So I want to swap the last two bits, the least significant two bits. So which of these code snippets, if any, does that? And I'll give you a couple minutes, and you can talk to your neighbor. As for figuring this out, my recommendation is you can say like, oh, we have x shifted over 1, so that takes a, b, c, d, e, f, and makes it become 0, a, b, c, d, e. And that's how I'd start figuring this out. Probably out of time, so I'll briefly go through the first one just to give you an idea how you should do it, and the slides will be posted with this sort of explanation for all of them. So for the first one, we have this. First we take x shifted over 1, so we get 0, a, b, c, d, e. We end with 1, so we just get e, and it's in the position we want it at the end. Remember, we wanted to swap e and f. Then for this part, we take all but 1, so we have our mask of tilde 1 is 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0. And when we end with that, we get a, b, c, d, e. We strip off the f, We OR those together. We have 0 ORed with A is A, 0 ORed with B is B, and so on, and we get A, B, C, D, E, E. So it's just close, but not what we wanted, because we wanted to have the bit F end up in this position. Yeah?
Can you go back to slide so I can get the
sure. Yeah.
I feel like I need to have like drawings.